The conference is now recording. You can go ahead.
Thanks very much.
Okay, Mike, I'll start. Mike O'Connor. Staff, we have Liz Gaster and Marika Koenigs can't be on the call, unfortunately. Christian Curtis, Beau Brendler, Adam Palmer, Carol Ferrer, Mike Rodenbach, Rodney Joffe, Wendy Seltzer, James Bladel, Zbigniew Lobel, Greg Aaron, Dave Piscitello, Mark Perkle, and Rod Rasmussen. Have I missed anybody?
Yeah, you missed Glenn. And Glenn is on. Okay, here's the agenda, folks.
I think we've got a pretty comfortable conversation to have today, but I think it'll probably take the whole 2 hours. And if anybody wants to add to it, we'll try and stick it at the end. Can everybody hear me okay? When I was listening to the recording of the call last week, I thought I was kind of quiet. People can hear okay. I'll take that as a yes.
Yep.
Very
yeah, it's fine.
Okay. We'll take a quick look at the stuff we did last week and get some updates on those issues. Then I've got some tasty discussion topics for us that I hope will evoke lots of conversation. And we'll then wrap up by looking into next week. And with that, I'm going to switch to the status report, which looks like that. And in the status report this week, I'm happy to report that there's nothing to care about. We're on schedule. We seem to be making good progress. We've got scope under control. So this is the kind of status report we want to see. We did a lot of stuff last week, people. We've, I think, had a pretty energetic and productive conversation about both the definition that we want to use for fast flux and the scope, which sort of got folded into the same one. We're going to go through that a little bit later, but I just want to give us a pat on the back collectively for what I think was pretty good work.
Pretty good work.
Let's see. Getting a lot of great stuff here. Everybody else hearing me three times too?
Yeah, I've got an echo.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a speakerphone that's not
I
muted.
I can get the operator mic.
Okay. Yikes. Well, anyway, I'll carry on. Look to myself. See if we can get through this. We kicked off several discussions, which I think we'll probably carry on this week, and those fell into sort of a benefits area, and then proposed solutions we kicked off a bit. And I'll save plans for next week for later, but we are getting to the end of the first informal input constituency round. At least in the BC, we're starting to get some results to that. And I might have some commentary about that template later. We'll see. Anyway, that's the status. Your tariff is all good. We're fine. No issues. My favorite kind of status report. So now I want to move on to the next part, which is to take a look at some of the actions that we had outstanding last week. And I think I'll kick it off with just a conversation to touch base with the data people, Dave, Greg, Rod, Rodney. How's that going? Are we making progress there?
So on my stuff, I had some logistical problems in that we have so many domains, it turns out, in TLDs that are rate-limiting queries that it sort of slowed down us getting the first round of data, which is to identify. Just so you know, there's four classes that we broke this down into. Domains that the registry showed that we were delegated as well as someone else being delegated. So Ultra DNS plus perhaps the customer, the domain holder themselves. Domains that we showed that we were delegated in the registry. In our system, There were additional name servers that were actually configured, which are the ones we think are the most interesting. And then what we've done is we've dipped that on to see where the differences are. And what we're now doing is actually doing the, I think we'll finish being able to get all of that data from the registries later today. And so it looks like it won't be until Monday morning so I can actually give you all of the data that we were looking at last week. But I will have it by Monday morning, assuming that's not too late.
Oh, it's fine. I'm pretty relaxed on how we're doing in terms of making progress here. I think that's going to be more than fine. And again, hats off to you and your folks for undertaking that project. I think it's going to be really helpful to see the results. So, thanks for that update. That was Rodney, by the way. Others? Dave, Greg, Rod? How's the stuff going on your projects?
This is Rod. Not to be confused with Rodney.
Yeah, thank you. We had some off-list conversation about that.
No worries. We've gotten several people who are volunteering to send us data. We just haven't seen a lot of it yet.
But a couple of different security companies and researchers are trying to put together some stats to contribute to the project. And I've gotten connected in the last day here to a project that's being run out of the University of Milan. I should have thought of a while ago because I've heard about this before. It's called the Fluxor Project. And they're actually tracking, it looks like about 120,000 domain names that are on their definition of FastFlux, including several benign ones, as they call them. So I think we get data for both sides of the equation here. They've got a very cool website with really cool graphics on it, but they don't have, on that website, they don't have the ability to actually take a look at kind of the underpinning display. So got some outreach going on to them right now. I don't know if anybody else in the group have a direct connection to them. It's the University of Milan Fluxor Project. I don't know if Joe may have some connection there. But I've been introduced to some contacts at Ironport who work with them. So hoping to get some data out of them next week because they have an active project tracking all this stuff, at least the stuff that they're seeing. It looks very exciting.
That's terrific. If you need any help from me as the chair on an email, don't be shy. I'm happy to write.
No, believe me, I won't be.
I just got my formal introduction letter. I just came in my email this morning to the person running the group from my
trusted introducer, as we say in the business.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Hopefully we'll be able to get under the hood and some of the data they've got there and bring that into the discussion here.
Rod, this is Liz. If you happen to need help with either interpretation or translation, you should let Glenn or I know as well.
Okay. Yeah. And I from the looks of it, the person running this is an English speaker. But yeah, if we have an Italian translation issue, I'll definitely check for that.
And I'm not volunteering personally. I'll just help.
Right. I realize.
Cool. Okay. Dave, Greg, anything from your efforts?
Well, my efforts are in parallel with Greg's, and I've in the same situation. I've had people offer me data. In particular, this week I got someone from Australia who said he had some very interesting data, and he asked me what out of his 700 megabytes of data I might want, and I sent him off with a number of ways to look at the data, and he said he'd get back to me. But most of these people have full-time jobs, and offering data is a nice thing. But as Rodney attests, once you get into trying to distill data down to a specific request, it takes some time, scripting and the like, and that doesn't happen overnight. So.
Yeah.
So Dave, it's Liz. If you need any help with interpretation or translation, there too.
I think the guy from Australia speaks pretty good English.
Okay.
I can perhaps help there as well if you like.
I was going to say, we have Australians in our group already.
Yeah, I've got plenty of Australian translation. I can always ask Paul.
Okay. Great.
Is that Oscar, or is that somebody else?
Speaking of data, Rod, thank you very much for the data you did send me. I'm going to start to parse through that because I'd like to take advantage of it when I go see the CCTLD.
Oh, yeah, is that Oscar or somebody else in Australia?
You know what? I don't have it right in front of me, but I'll let you know. Yeah.
Okay, because I've been reaching out to Oscar too, so they may have some data. Okay, thank you.
Oh, neat. Okay. All right, anything else on data? It sounds like data is in good shape. I like the sounds of all this. Legitimate user. Next, Wendy, Greg, I got to the bottom of my barrel of legitimate users, so I've got nothing to report beyond what I did last week. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Greg. I missed a lot of last week's meeting, so I don't know which examples you discussed. Could you recap briefly for me?
Briefly, I got to Thompson West Publishing CTO and Chief Information Security Officer, and sort of put the outlines of the question to them thusly. We're looking at fast flux as an issue. One of the facets of that is low TTLs on both hosts and DNS servers. What sorts of TTLs do you use in your environment, and is there a difference between the way you do it on hosts and DNS servers, and what would be the impact to you if we were to use Kruckerian logic, some sort of token permissioning thing, to perhaps control low TTLs, especially on the DNS host side, the DNS side, not the host side. And the word I got back from both the folks at Thomson Reuters and the folks at a startup that actually does a lot more traffic than Reuters does, was that they use pretty low TTLs, especially on their host side. The Reuters standard TTL is 30 seconds, and as Rodney said in his part of the conversation yesterday, there are some people who set their TTL to zero. There are legitimate users that use really low TTLs. They were somewhat less than totally ecstatic about the idea of the Kruckerian logic, primarily because of the concern about introducing another point of failure, and as you might expect, folks who run really big data centers get grouchy about that. But they weren't panicky grouchy. They were just...
Okay. Yeah, I think the issue of low TTLs, I think that's going to be definitively settled. The RFCs allow it for many, many legitimate uses. I'm thinking of it in another way. Is there anybody out there that makes rapid or repeated changes to their names, to the resource records?
Well, and that's where everybody sort of agreed that was much more unusual.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize that off list conversation that a few of us had looking at a particular example because we weren't sure what to make of it. I'm going to summarize that thread and send it out to the group because I don't think we're still not able to make heads or tails of it in a lot of ways, and it's probably not the best example, but it's of interest and fair enough to throw it out there for examination. I won't go into the details because I'll post just what we know and what we don't for the group. But we found an example of a service, and we're not. It looks like it uses the technique of rotating IPs and so forth, but we're not sure whether it's a service that is criminal or not. And there are a lot of complicated questions around this kind of thing. I think what we're really talking about is what's going on out there in the wild on the Internet.
And the answer is we don't know. Or we don't have a good feel for it. And so any, we have to figure out, you know, if a particular solution was implemented, what might be the result? Right now, I don't know the answers. So let me take it upon myself to summarize that and send it out.
Terrific. You will find yourself immortalized in the action items for next week. Okay. Let's see, we've covered Rodney's thing. And then I just want to briefly drop us in on the fast flux definition. For those of you who weren't right on top of the only, you know, last week was a pretty moderate week. I think it was only 200 or 300 emails. So a little concerned that we're going to easily break the 1,000 email barrier, but concerned that we may flatten out. We may not get to 2,000 unless we work hard at it. This is where we wound up at the end of the definitions discussion. And I'm not sure I want to actually go through this in detail now on the call, because we did spend an awful lot of time on the email side of the house going through this, but this is starting to edge into preliminary final draft stage in my mind. So this would be a good time for those of you who haven't followed every single email to sort of check back in and see how we're doing. Because I think we made a lot of very positive, useful progress last week in email on this. And I think it helps in a lot of ways. It helps with the data discussion. It helps with the solutions discussion. I think just leave it at that, sort of an attaboy for us, having made the progress we did, but it's time to sort of zero in on this one and make sure that we've got it right. And I'm not even going to encourage discussion. I really wanted to start three new discussions. I do love the fact that these calls are recorded because I don't have to take notes. But I am starting to edging around in my own mind, at least, towards writing a first draft of the final report, or at least the interim report. And I may try to get that draft out for next week's call, even though we've clearly got lots and lots of stuff still coming in. I think it's getting to the point where we can start to actually edit a draft. And the first thing that I wanted to try out on the group as I was sort of writing my draft was a headline. Because I think it's useful to come up with, you know, a kind of broad statement of what we want ourselves to be remembered for. And the headline I came up with was, ICANN helps reduce fast flux hosting, as sort of a summary of a desired outcome of what we're trying to do here. And I put this up in my standard sort of village idiot way. I have no editorial pride. I just want to kick off a discussion that gets us to a sense as a group of what we want to be remembered for. And again, let's see, can I do this? Let's use the raise-handing thing for the queue like we've been doing. For those of you who are new to the Adobe Connect gizmo, if you want to raise your hand, all you have to do is click on your name. I bet what happens is this recursive? I'll bet this is recursive. But let's say that I wanted to raise my hand. I could click on my little name, and then I could, what could I do?
Oh, I don't want to do that. Oh. Somebody remind me how to raise your hand.
It is actually below the text, the EIM facility. Once you click on your name, just below that there's a little, so if you take your cursor below the IM window.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
Just a little bit lower, I think. Your interface is slightly different to mine. I'm on a Mac, but I believe it will be below.
You're right. There we go. Way at the bottom of your screen is a little button that you can use to raise your hand. And Albo is dragging it. Anyway, what that does is it gives us a queue, and it makes it really easy for me to see who wants to talk. So if you want to get in the queue, just click the raise hand button, and I'll see it. Off we'll go. Right, so there you go. How's that headline? ICANN helps reduce fast flux hosting. Have at it, people. I'll raise your hands at once. Does that mean it's really good, or does that mean it's so bad that people are shocked and can't figure out how to even approach the problem? Go ahead, Mark.
I'm not sure that's the best title for it, because we're not stopping fast flux hosting as just a method. We're fighting fraud and abuse. So I would think that, you know, maybe something along those lines might be better.
Okay, others? I'm not going to even take notes. I love the fact that the call is recorded. What I'll do is I'll just sort of synthesize this conversation as we go. And so, I mean, one way to write that headline would be to say, ICANN helps reduce fraud, phishing, fill in the blank, by zeroing in on FastFlux hosting, something like that. That work better for folks? It's either really good or really bad. I'm not concerned at all if it's really good. I'm only concerned if it's really bad. I could do a poll. You want to do a poll? That's fun.
It's not really bad, you know. I mean, that's reasonable to me.
Yeah, let's see. If I push this button, what happens? Oh, yes. This is our anchovy pizza poll. Hang on a minute. How is the headline? Question mark. Answer is good. Bad. Now I've got it open. You should be able to vote. You should be seeing results. I'm hoping you see results. Not getting many votes. Christian, go ahead.
Sorry, I was disconnected briefly. Could you repeat what the headline is?
The headline is ICANN. Let's see, I'll take Mark's friendly amendment. ICANN helps reduce fraud and phishing, fill in the blank, on the net by zeroing in on the fast flux hosting problem, something like that. The original headline was, ICANN helps reduce fast flux hosting. Mark wanted to broaden our attention to saying, well, we're really trying to reduce fraud, phishing, etc. And so I, you know, in a fairly lame way, inserted that into the headline. So we got a sort of, can people see the results? Can you see the two-thirds, one-third result?
Yeah.
Okay. For those of you who are in the 33% that are thinking this isn't so great, chime in at this point and help us make it better. James, go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. I just had a couple of ideas or suggestions to throw out to the group. One would be to replace the word helps with something like a more action-oriented verb, like investigates or studies or examines. And I think that reduction or elimination kind of gets ahead of ourselves by presupposing what the outcome of all of this effort will be. So maybe something that just focuses on the examination or the investigation work, I would be more comfortable with. But those are just thoughts at this point.
That's good. Others? Switch back to, go ahead, Greg.
I think the ambit of our working group is to examine possible policy solutions. But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves by saying we're coming up with solutions.
Okay, so I can address it, investigate. Technical and policy. Well, I'm not going to do this. This is a bad idea. I'm not going to edit at the same time. I'm going to just talk. I'll figure this out later. Thanks, Greg. Others? I'll just take all this and mash it together into another headline. We'll have lots of chances to beat this headline up as we go because, you know, sort of the kickoff, but this is very helpful. Okay, I'm going to close the poll and go back to sharing. Anybody got anything else to say about the headline, or did the comment sort of cover people's concerns? Last chance. Okay. I'm going to move on now to the impact of fast flux, and I want to throw an idea out to the group and see if this understanding that I've come to is on the right track. We had a lot of discussion about the impact of fast flux. And one of the things that emerged for me is that the impact of fast flux is difficult to separate from the impact of all of the techniques that fast flux assists in, like phishing, spam, malware, etc. So most of the impacts that we described are impacts of those techniques that FastFlux is sort of part of the toolkit of. It's an enabler of. And that was really hard for us to, and maybe I took us down a blind alley by saying, well, yeah, but what can we attribute, what can we lay only at the door of FastFlux? And as I've reread those threads and cogitated about it, it seems to me that another approach to this is to say that, essentially to just say what I just said, which is FastFlux is an enabler to a bunch of bad things. They have a bunch of impacts on a lot of people. We're going to restate those at a very broad level, but not try to arrive at the definitive answer, because that issue has been explored by, in much more depth by many others. And that what we're interested in is the fact that fast flux is a technique that helps people do that. And try and figure out the impact on that broader problem that could be laid to the at the doorstep of getting rid of fast flux in the sort of hypothetical way. So in other words, not try and attribute impact directly to fast flux, but rather to just say fast flux is an enabler that allows a whole bunch of these things to happen or assists people in doing those things. And it's our expert wild guess that we can reduce that impact, probably in a non-quantifiable way, by reducing the availability of that tool to the bad guys. And I'm trying to say this in a succinct way, and being Irish, that's really difficult, but does that con- A, is that fairly clear, and B, is that a reasonable summary of our position at this stage of the game? Go ahead. Again, don't all raise your hands at once.
Mike, this is Rod. I actually do have my hand literally raised. But
oh, you do? Cool.
I think that, and I think this touched on something Eric brought up on the list the week before last, is, you know, we've got all these different harms out there. Why do we care about Facebook more than anything else?
Hang on a minute, Rod. I'm going to encourage us all to mute. Somebody's got either a speakerphone or something going on with a lot of background noise that's making Rod almost impossible for me to hear. Thanks, folks. Go ahead, Rod.
Okay. I think this addresses something that Eric brought up on the list, is why do we care about Facebook differently than all the other ways that people put up these fraudulent, criminal, malicious, whatever adjective you want to use, websites. That's a very legitimate question. All of the behaviors we're talking about here as far as the types of harm that are coming to individuals, and all the, you know, millions, billions, trillions, whatever the amount of dollars of damage it's causing, they can all be done using different techniques. I think that one of the things we need to quantify, and I think we can quantify this, I think there is some data on this, is why is FastFlux so much more effective, and how much more effective is it than a standard type of exploit?
You think you can quantify that?
Well, we certainly have examples of that. There's the Cambridge study on phishing, for example, looked at FastFlux and Rock domain lifetimes versus standard hacked servers or other, you know, types of phishing sites, and found that the lifetimes were, you know, five times longer or so.
That's great.
Yeah, and
it's not good for the world, but it's great.
That's why a lot of people in the security community have been raising this issue. If it was just as effective as any other technique, I don't think we'd be putting quite as much emphasis on it. But because of the way the bad guys are using this system, and it's leading to much longer times for these sites to be live, it leads to much more harm. I know we've got some data from at least a couple of our financial customers look at exactly that, right? What is the impact of a site being up for, say, 5 hours versus 5 days? And there's actually hard dollars that can be extrapolated from that. So,
sure, absolutely.
I've got that kind of information. We can certainly bring in the Cambridge information, but I think that should be part of the discussion here as to, you know, what we're trying to do here is, and why, you know, why we're attacking Facebook. Trying to do something about it. It's not just that it enables this stuff, it's that it's better at enabling this stuff than a lot of the other methods that are out there, and as a result, criminals are using it in, you know, what appears to be larger and larger amounts.
Right. I think that's a nugget, that whole piece of the conversation. Do other people want to dive in at this point? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not paying attention. Somebody, I think, had their hand up and it disappeared off my screen. Somebody go ahead and dive in.
This is Mark, and I'm going to agree with what was just said. And also, I'd like to include that usually FastFlux by itself isn't a method of fraud. Usually FastFlux is combined with spam, for instance, that points to the FastFlux domain. So I think that some of the other techniques, you know, need to be sort of looked at in that how are they used with FastFlux. You know, for example, spam that points to FastFlux. So, you know, first the victim gets the spam saying that their bank has been limited, click here to put in your username and password to unlock it, and then that points to a domain that's FastFlux. So I think we should have sort of like a broader look about how FastFlux is used in combination with other types of fraud techniques.
I think that's an interesting idea. I don't want to go into an exploration of all of spam.
because that gets too big and it would slow us down too much. But the idea of how fast flux amplifies some of those other techniques, and again, data to support it would be...
Well, or how they interconnect, because you see, if you have fax flux being driven by spam, if you can stop the spam, then the fax flux becomes less effective. And if you know the domain is fax fluxing, you can make a decision as part of, you know, information with other things to stop the spam that points to the fax fluxing domain.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Others? Anybody else want to dive in on this? I mean, I'm not hearing anybody saying that I was wrong in that first rant. I take both of these as sort of course corrections, but rather than try and I think part of the reason I want to have this discussion, and Mike Rodenbaugh, I think you're on the call, I hope, this is partly because I kind of want to change the framing questions. When we talk about all these different kinds of folks who are harmed, it gets us distracted in a way. And what I'd rather do is sort of take all those harm questions and sort of lump them together and say, look, the whole community, all these different stakeholders are harmed in different ways by the same thing. And rather than try and put them in silos, essentially sidestep the whole issue by saying what I'm lobbying for here, which is fast flux can't be pinned with specific harms. It's the fact that it enables, and to Rod's point, makes more effective harms that are already defined. I'm hearing the silence of, yeah, that's close enough, go ahead, Mike. So this is your last chance to give me a course correction. If not, I'll sort of carry forward that approach. Thanks, Rod and Mark, for the clarification.
Mark, this is Eric.
Well, go ahead, Eric.
Please note that I posted earlier a disagreement without a person. Thank you.
Got it. You want to come back with a counterpoint, or do you want to just be on record as disagreeing?
As there are problems with the phones, I think just being on record is sufficient. However, it's all in the note that I sent on benefits and the previous note on harm.
Okay. Got it. So are other people having a hard time hearing the call? Or is it a problem with Eric's connection?
I'm having no except with Eric.
Yeah, Eric, I think your connection may be at fault here. You were breaking up a bit when you were talking, so sorry to hear that. It's not going so well for you. Okay. Carrying on with my village idiot style of conversation, one of the conversations that I kicked off yesterday, I sort of want to, again, take some freeform time to kick around in this group, and this is the notion of essentially turning the harm discussion on its head and saying, what are the benefits of doing something about fast flux? Who benefits? How do they benefit? What I did, just for fun, because Joe pushed along some really neat, huge numbers, which allow for silly math, and I love silly math, is I did some silly math on the net, or on the email list, where I took all of Joe's numbers, which are by no means, I'm sure, all of the harm that's really associated with all these techniques, but it added up to a $500 billion a year pile, which is enough. And I did sort of effectiveness math and got us down to the point where you could say, if we could reduce that harm by 0.25%, we'd be saving something on the order of $600,000 an hour. Because, you know, that's the beauty of large numbers like that, is that you can get giant numbers back. And
Dave correctly came right back and said, be careful what you promise. And I came back on that and said that this is really more of a statement of aspiration than it is a promise, in that I think it's good for us to think about how this would help people. What's in it for them? What's in it for the registries? What's in it for the registrars? If we could do something constructive here, how could people get motivated to get up in the morning and help move this cause forward? And so I've thrown out sort of four topic areas that I'd just like to spend maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes on each, just brainstorming. This will all come back to you for editing. We don't have to worry about outlandish notions at this point. But just to kick it off, how could, you know, if you think about in the true Deming Baldrige Award-winning sense, quality, which has lots and lots of richness for those of you who've spent time in that community. I don't want to go through the whole definition, but there's a lot in the quality jar. How could doing something about fast flux improve the quality of either the experience of a customer or the delivery for a producer of services? And that could range from, you know, if you think about quality as a way of reducing errors, you know, how could this reduce errors for people? How could this in any way improve the quality of the experience of the Internet for its users and its providers?
It's Mike Rodenbaugh. I'll jump in on that, I think.
Go for it.
Isn't it by necessity, if you ended all of the criminal and malicious fast flux activity on the various networks, doesn't that by necessity mean that everybody else would have faster and better resources?
Yeah, so you would remove, you know, that would be an improvement of, you know, the quality of the service.
And also it takes away a potential threat to ability of a registrar or registry, one of these attacks truly gets out of hand.
Right. Which would, you know, mean that they could spend less time on that kind of stuff and devote those resources to improving their products in other ways. Since I would presume that right now, dealing with all this stuff consumes a fair proportion of not just registrar, but, you know, business, access provider, and customer resources. That's partly a cost or a resource avoidance, but another way to frame that is those resources that you used to spend on those things can now be applied to making your product better, getting more customers, generating more revenue. You know, one of the problems with all of this stuff is that almost all of this activity is entirely non-value added to the enterprise. If it could be removed, nobody is in business to deliver any of these things. They're doing it because they need it in order to provide their customers a reasonable experience or to keep criminals away from them. But there, you know, there isn't much value added in fighting malware. It's just a necessity. Now, it seems to me that another facet to this, and it came up on the email list, is that there's a reputation component that touches almost every stakeholder. You know, the harm is loss of reputation. The benefit, it seems to me, is that if a registrar, registry, business, customer, whatever, has this issue addressed, then their reputation is necessarily higher. And that might be a selling point. It might be that, you know, pick somebody in the business community, let's say a bank figures out a way
to deliver their services over the net that is absolutely secure against attack. And this is all hypothetical. And let's say that they're the only bank that has that. Well, that might be a competitive advantage for them in getting customers. Same, it seems to me, might go for registries or registrars. If a registry is perceived to be safer, or even better yet, demonstrably safer, it would seem to me that that might be a competitive advantage for that registry, and that that might in turn motivate others to compete with them, to bring themselves up to that level of capability. You know, one of the things that wound up cost and essentially justifying the whole security program at MinSCU, the state college and university system here in Minnesota, that I ran for a while, was the discovery that we could teach classes on security to students, because security is a really hot area right now, and we could, by getting really good at security, pipe some of the knowledge that we had on the security team side out into the curriculum and bring in more students. And in fact, we wound up making a profit on the security cost center last year because we brought in more students than the cost of running the center. So that's the kind of thing I'm hunting for right now. It's sort of the opposite side of harm. It's the harm discussion, but it's inverted. Anybody else got any ideas of really good things that would happen? Not just quality, but, you know, let's open it up to all the other stuff. Response time is one that it strikes me that is at the core of a lot of our discussion right now. You know, Rod's point that a 5-hour site is much worse than a 5-day site, and the fact that the bad guys are getting their response
the way around.
I thought, well, the 5-day site is worse, right? Whatever I said. Yeah, sorry about that. Old guys do that. Thank you. It seems to me that the bad guys have the response time argument figured out. They're getting much better at responding. And that to the extent that we can get better at responding, that's a good thing. I think that that's a justification, especially for a lot of the instrumentation, information-based kinds of proposals that we've been floating, in that it reduces the response time of the good guys. And it's not just the registrar or the registry, it's all of the good guys. It's again, spread across the whole stakeholder community as a benefit. Now, some of this you can't put any dollar value on, except to the extent of doing the sort of, you know, impact avoidance math, the sort of goofy math. But that's okay with me. It still strikes me as something that we can support in a report. And I'm just, you know, I'm going to shovel a bunch of these that I make up on my own into a draft and let you all shoot at them, but I'd be interested to see if anybody else has got ideas to contribute to this pile. So I'll be quiet and wait for a minute. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, you know, if we're stopping fraud and we're stopping people from getting their money cleaned out of their checking accounts, then they have more money to spend registering domains and buying services from ISPs and things like that, you know, if you want to look for a benefit of doing that.
Well, and let me rephrase that a bit. It seems to me that there's probably, you know, I was looking at the .info policy that Afilias has promulgated and thought about it. You know, I imagine that .info as a TLD was getting a pretty bad rep because such a huge proportion of its domains were being used for phishing and malware. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we could be invisible observers of their managerial meetings if they didn't say at some point, if this domain, if this TLD is perceived as unsafe, it's going to make it difficult to sell names in that TLD. we will probably sell more names in that TLD if we can change that perception. I would certainly say that. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody in that group did too. Well, I'm not evoking a huge outpouring, so I'll leave this for now. But, you know, feel free to either beat me up on the list or privately on this, and we'll carry on. James, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Just a thought that indirect benefit would be that if fast flux and associated spam and other activities require a degree of organization and coordination between a wide variety of criminal elements, and any remediation of that would disrupt those networks. Thinking botnets, malware distribution, spam, and a lot of it just touches on so many different areas. This makes it difficult to identify, define, and solve. But it also makes it any counteraction, I think, disruptive to those networks.
Yeah, I think that's right. Right. Any more? Last call? Okay. One more sort of open brain. Let me see how we're doing on time. Oh, yeah, we're fine. Sort of brainstorming conversation I'd like to have, and then we can carry, we'll carry all these on the list. Would be to throw out ideas about options that we want to propose. We've got a pretty good list starting to build. But I just wanted to see if people wanted to float an idea or try something out or anything like that while we're on the phone together. Or are we... Maybe we're just real comfortable doing this on the list. For those of you who aren't, you know, the list is, of course, the 80-20 rule applies on the list. There's 20% of us that are going a mile a minute, and 80% of you are being pretty quiet. Is that okay? That it's that unbalanced? Is it from dismay that you're not participating much, overwhelmed? Because, you know, the list is pretty productive. And, it, you know, all joking aside, it does produce an awful lot of email. But there's a lot going on there, and I just want to make sure that folks who are either uncomfortable participating in the list or want to try stuff out in a different way have a chance to speak. I don't want to block you all out. Sort of take that as everything's okay. Nothing on solution. I'm not as concerned about that one because we are having a pretty good conversation about that on the list. I think that's it, unless people have other topics that they'd like to talk about today. It seems like we're making pretty good progress on a lot of fronts. I don't really want to get in the way of any of that.
I'd love to ask a general question when we get to that point in today's call.
This is a good spot for that. Go ahead.
Is there a sense amongst the group that the answer to this is to actually make changes to the policy that change what can and can't be done, or is the movement towards recommending a system where you make the information available and external parties make their own decisions based on the data?
I think that's a wonderful question. I'm not sure that we've got a sense either way at this point. There are certainly a number of proposals on the table, most of which don't require much in the way of policy change. What's the sense from other folks?
Dave, go ahead.
So I'm sort of curious about what Rodney means when he says external parties. One of the things that we've been talking about today, for example, on the email is this notion of, of an accredited or a list of accredited parties who would be able to have an accelerated path towards a suspension. And, we obviously have lots to go through before we conclude that. But my sense is that policy is too static. And what I would like to see in policy is the ability for registries and registrars to take on a little bit more responsibility and accountability for dealing with malicious acts that involve domain names. So I would not imagine that a change to an RAA would say you must implement X. I would like to see something that comes out of the group that says here is a set of best practices, and somehow create some sort of an encouragement or enticement for registries and registrars to do that. Now, what would that be? I don't know. I mean, it might be that registries who comply to the best practices only pay 24 cents of domain. I don't know. But the notion is that there's got to be an incentive for people to actually do this. Typically, the incentive is monetary, especially if they're going to be spending money doing it. And so I'm just trying to think of, think past whether it's policy, or not yet think about policy, more think about let's get a list of solutions and see what that list is. And then see what the implications are of not only the individual ones but the sum of those.
Great comments, thanks, Dave. Other comments on that one? I think it's a great question. And as Dave was talking, I'll fill in with a little Irish blather while you're thinking. One of the things that can provide non-monetary incentive is also information. So, for example, one thing we could do is suggest that registries and registrars and businesses and access providers and anybody else who wants to participate share the information on things like how fast did they respond to a request to take action on average. And put a metric of some sort out there that just says, this is a metric that we want to use. It could be voluntary. It could be otherwise, but, voluntary seems like a good place to start. And not just track, not just post the average, but also post the trend, which hopefully would go downward and to the right. This is ancient Baldrige quality stuff again, and it's really back to the that which gets measured gets done kind of thing, and is a way to get out of the monetary and policy arena and still drive positive change into a system. So there's a thought too. Other folks got comments on that question? The good one.
Well, this is Mark, and I have an idea on that. My idea would be to, using good registry reporting techniques, that we would actually reduce the burden on the registry by having systems that makes reporting, easier and keeping the spammers out of the reporting system, so that registries and registrars want to adopt this because it makes their life easier. I think that we can come up with solutions to make life easier for registrars, and when you make life easier and they're more profitable, they're going to want to do it because it makes life easier.
Yeah, I agree. That's the what's in it for me approach, which I like a lot. And maybe that's, I haven't been following the list this morning because I sort of turned off email to get ready for the meeting, but maybe that's what this accredited conversation is about. One of the things that occurred to me is that I think Randy put up a really good post about solutions late yesterday, and one of those was to encourage registries to instrument their registries so that they could generate some of this information. I'm not sure that instrumentation necessarily has to happen at the registry.
it seems to me that maybe independent organizations could be certified to do that, Fish Tank, Google, and that the registrar community wouldn't have to pay to build it. They would just simply have to share information. I don't know if that's where that conversation was going, but that seems to me to be a way to take some of the cost and implementation burden off of the registry committee.
So this is Wendy, and I get really uncomfortable when I hear about trusted private accredited entities and tools to let them take action, sort of both outside of public scrutiny, and so I would lean toward providing information and letting the groups that exist outside of ICANN and under government or other checks and balances and due process take that information and use it, especially when we're talking about criminal activity. So my preferred solutions would lean toward the informational and even away from the best practice with a push, because some of those pushes sound like shoves into making the best practices mandatory.
Yeah, I think there's an ocean of gray in there for sure. And I think that would be a good conversation for the list to sort of put some boundaries on what would be appropriate or acceptable and what wouldn't. That's a great point, Wendy. Other comments?
Nope. Rod,
go ahead, Rod.
I'd just like to take the polar opposite position from Wendy on that one.
It's all right. We're allowed to have opposite points of view.
I shouldn't say polar opposite. I understand where she's coming from. That's an area for me, of critical expertise. And unfortunately, there is no governmental agency authority whatsoever that can actually affect any kind of mitigation in anything other than glacial speed, which is why, you know, companies like mine exist and others in this field, and why we've got volunteer efforts and others out there that are trying to do something to mitigate harm against individuals as quickly as possible. So having a process to go through is actually, I think, preferable to the current situation where we have kind of a Wild West thing going on out there where people are reporting to other people, and if you know somebody at some place, then they'll act quickly for you. If you don't, but they may not even pay attention to you. Some people have very well-defined policies as to how to deal with things, and other people have none. So actually putting a framework around it, I think, actually helps in the end everybody to create at least a set of boundaries. And if we want to push the boundaries around based on where various concerns come in about privacy and due process and things like that, I think that's reasonable. Right now we're in anarchy when it comes to a lot of the dealing with the issues that FastFlux represents. So anything we can do, I think, to help frame that far better will help out. So, but I think you're right. I think this is a great list discussion, because we can go on and on, I think, for hours debating.
Well, but one of the advantages of doing this in conversation is that we can clarify some things. And I want to just check and see with Wendy. Wendy, when you were reacting to what I said, I heard your reaction as, be careful of giving these external certified organizations this authority. And I guess what I heard is sort of a subtext in what you were saying is perhaps to leave that authority within the existing ICANN structure. Is that what you were saying, or did I misinterpret that?
The first part, yes. I don't believe that ICANN has a lot of that authority right now, and I believe that it's a good thing that it doesn't either. I think we have court systems that are the best judges of criminality as it differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and we can do things to provide information that can be used in those processes, but I don't want to see us replacing them.
I don't understand how you make the leap from, you know, from an accredited agent to, you know, abrogating, you know, legal due process. Every time people do this, I just get lost. So I don't see anywhere that we have explicitly said, let's do this completely barring and ignoring the rights of registrants. I've never seen that in any conversation, Wendy.
Hang on there. Settle down there, Dave. You know, I'll intervene as your chair and ringleader. Ringmaster. You know, brainstorming's great, but let's not get annoyed with each other personally.
I'm not saying that we've gone all that way, but processes that sort of privilege one group of parties over others can make it easier to let those privileged parties take away the rights of the masses. And we've seen it in some of the anti-spam contexts that I'm trying to keep us from going down that path with anti-fast flux.
I think this is really important, folks. So I kind of want to... I'll take an action to kick off a thread on this topic, and I want to name the topic because I think if we can put some boundaries on this that we can all feel comfortable with, that we will have advanced the cause a lot. Somebody want to put a title on this? I don't... One of the advantages of being the village idiot is I don't know what to call these things. But what would be a good title for that email thread?
I like due process.
You got it. Anybody uncomfortable with that?
I object to that. It's not.
I agree.
All right. So let's refine that a bit. Keep going. Counterproposal?
How about response process?
Response process, okay. Wendy, you okay with that one?
Sure.
Cool.
So we're really already kicking this discussion off under the guise of proposed solutions, right, Mike?
Well, we are and we aren't. I mean, what I want to do with this particular one is again, sort of from the village edit perspective, it seems to me that there is the balance between the rights of the masses, the individuals, which I think Wendy is the advocate for at this point, the needs of law enforcement and others who are trying to mitigate harm. I'll tag Rod with that for the moment, although he doesn't have to accept that one. And, you know, this is an age-old discussion. And what we need to do is translate, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants here, people. I mean, this is a discussion that's gone on for thousands of years. But we need to arrive at a place where we strike the right balance, or at least strike a proposed balance between those forces so that each side has their needs met as best as possible. And then recognize that neither side is going to be entirely pleased with what we come up with. This is like when I used to negotiate union contracts. We always used to say that the contract was good when both of us were equally dissatisfied. So it's not that we're going to come to a conclusion, but I think the discussion of that balance and trying to delineate it is a topic in and of itself that will then help us choose between some of those proposed solutions that are out there. But I'd like to keep the topic purer than in the context of a solution, unless we need it you know, we may need a straw man solution to have that discussion around. And maybe the straw man is certified agent, and if that's the one to trigger it, fine. But, you know, not pull all the solutions into this, but try and stay focused on that balance. I'm gonna tie that off. I'll summarize all that in an email and get it out later today in the email side. That was a great question. That was all triggered by the question that came up: are we after policy or information-based solutions? Do we have any other really great questions, general questions like that for the group?
This is Mark. I wanted to say one more thing about the accredited thing that Wendy's objecting to. The idea of the accreditation isn't to make an exclusive cobble of, you know, invisible, you know, agencies that secretly control, you know, who gets access to domains and who doesn't. The idea is to, you know, include people who are in the, you know, for instance, the filtering business, you know, who can send, you know, who are processing massive quantities of email. And let's say, you know, that I detect, you know, a specific domain that's being used for fraud, and I start sending in automated reports to GoDaddy, and GoDaddy simultaneously is not only getting reports from me, but they're receiving reports from...
Is it even remotely possible that this narrative could be shorter?
Eric, settle down. But Mark, it would be good to drive quickly to the point. We're getting pretty close to the end of the call here.
Okay, well, the point is that, you know, multiple reporting, accredited reporting people, you know, would report the same domain, and that would trigger the interest of the registrar, you know, who may make a decision about whether or not to shut down a domain that's being used for abuse, and it would include in these complaints the spam that's being sent, you know, that is questionable. And the idea of it being exclusive to accredited is not to make a you know, an exclusive group, but to more to keep out of it so that there isn't a lot of noise in the information, so that registrars can make more accurate decisions.
Okie doke, thanks. I'm going to snip this one off at this point because we are getting down to the end of the call. And I'll share my screen again.
This is Christian. Could I ask real quickly, have we allotted responsibility for someone to kick off that email thread?
Yeah, I've taken that action.
Okay.
I'll write it up. And then, you know, feel free to beat up my write-up, too. I'm not going to do much except launch the thread. I'm not at all... an expert on that stuff. Here's what I sort of put down for our plans for next week. I think we've got a couple to add, which I will. But the ones that I thought of is, I want to remind folks that the original deadline for the constituency input was next Friday, the 5th. And we've slid it out to the 8th. Oh, no. It was the midweek, but we slid it out to next Friday. So just a reminder to ping your respective constituencies one more time and say sort of last chance, folks, with two caveats. One, remind them that this is just the brainstorming phase. This is not the react to our suggestions phase yet. And then the other is that I'm growing less and less enamored with the template that I sent out. So if your responses come back in the template form, that's wonderful. If it turns out that it's very difficult to respond and wedge that response into the template, just note it and carry on. Because as our conversation has evolved, I think that the template doesn't necessarily work as well as it should. So you know, sometimes these things develop a life of their own, and I just want to let you know that at least from my perspective, I'm not terribly concerned at this stage if we don't adhere to the template. Then I'm not I think wrapping up benefits and proposed solutions sounds like really optimistic, so I think I'll just change that to continue. And I think that we'll continue that along with the threads that we've identified. And I'll get those out later today. You know, more in the form of the last one, resume or carry on or something like that. I think that although the email volume is probably approaching a record for a working group, that it's been very good, and we've gotten a lot done, and we've developed a hell of a body of knowledge, and I think that's a great thing. So just a final attaboy for all of us to carry on, and that's what I've got coming next week. Is there anything else that we need to cover today? In the last few minutes, we've got about 5 minutes before we're supposed to wrap up. I think we're done. Thanks, people. See you in a week, and see you on the net.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye, all.